an upright magistrate, took the cause in hand, and so managed both the rioters and him who set them at work, that they have been quiet as lambs ever since. Thursday the 5th, about 11, I preached at Elsham. The two persons who are the most zealous and active here are the steward and gardener of a gentleman whom the minister persuaded to turn them off unless they would leave this way. He gave them a week to consider of it, at the end of which they calmly answered, "Sir, we choose rather to want bread here than to want a drop of water hereafter." He replied, "Then follow your own conscience, so you do my business as well as formerly." Friday the 6th, I preached at Ferry at 9 in the morning and in the evening, and about noon in Sir N.H.'s hall at Gainsborough. Almost as soon as I began to speak, a cock began to crow over my head, but he was quickly dislodged, and the whole congregation, rich and poor, were quiet and attentive. Wesley unhorsed, Sunday the 8th. I set out for Misterton, though the common road was impassable, being all under water, but we found a way to ride round. I preached at 8, and I saw not one inattentive hearer. On our return, my mare, rushing violently through a gate, struck my heel against the gatepost and left me behind her in an instant, laid out on my back at full length. She stood still till I rose and mounted again. Neither of us was hurt at all. Tuesday the 10th. The wind abating, we took boat at Barton with two such brutes as I have seldom seen. Their blasphemy and stupid, gross obscenity were beyond all I ever heard. We first spoke to them mildly, but it had no effect. At length we were constrained to rebuke them sharply, and they kept themselves tolerably within bounds till we landed at Hull. I preached at 5, 2 hours sooner than was expected. By this means we had tolerable room for the greatest part of them that came, and I believe not many of them came in vain. Monday the 16th. At 6 I began preaching in the street at Thirst. The congregation was exceedingly large. Just as I named my text, "What is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" a man on horseback, who had stopped to see what was the matter, changed color and trembled. Probably he might have resolved to save his soul had not his drunken companion dragged him away. Wesley on Holy Island. Monday, May 21st, I took my leave of Newcastle and about noon preached in the marketplace at Morpeth. A few of the hearers were a little ludicrous at first, but their mirth was quickly spoiled. In the evening, I preached in the courthouse at Alnwick, where I rested the next day. Wednesday the 23rd, I rode over the sands to Holy Island, once the famous seat of a bishop, now the residence of a few poor families who live chiefly by fishing. At one side of the town are the ruins of a cathedral with an adjoining monastery. It appears to have been a lofty and elegant building, the middle aisle being almost entire. I preached in what was once the marketplace to almost all the inhabitants of the island, and distributed some little books among them, for which they were exceedingly thankful. In the evening I preached at Berwick upon Tweed, the next evening at Dunbar, and on Friday the 25th, about 10 at Haddington, in Provost D's yard, to a very elegant congregation. But I expect little good will be done here, for we begin at the wrong end. Religion must not go from the greatest to the least, or the power would appear to be of men. In the evening I preached at Musselburgh, and the next on the Calton Hill at Edinburgh. It being the time of the General Assembly, many of the ministers were there. The wind was high and sharp and blew away a few delicate ones, but most of the congregation did not stir till I had concluded. Sunday the 27th, at 7 I preached in the high school yard on the other side of the city. The morning was extremely cold. In the evening it blew a storm. However, having appointed to be on the Calton Hill, I began there to a huge congregation. At first the wind was a little troublesome, but I soon forgot it, and so did the people for an hour and a half, in which I fully delivered my own soul. Wesley at the General Assembly. Monday 28th, I spent some hours at the General Assembly, composed of about 150 ministers. I was surprised to find, one, that anyone was admitted, even lads 12 or 14 years old. Two, that the chief speakers were lawyers, six or seven on one side only. Three, that a single question took up the whole time, which, when I went away, seemed to be as far from a conclusion as ever, namely, shall Mr. Lindsay be removed to Kilmarnock Parish or not? The argument for it was, he has a large family and this living is twice as good as his own. The argument against it was, the people are resolved not to hear him and will leave the kirk if he comes. If then the real point in view had the greater good of the church been, as their law directs, instead of taking up 5 hours, the debate might have been determined in 5 minutes. On Monday and Tuesday, I spoke to the members of the society severely. Thursday the 31st, I rode to Dundee and about half an hour after six, preached on the side of a meadow near the town. Poor and rich attended. Indeed, there is seldom fear of wanting a congregation in Scotland. But the misfortune is they know everything, so they learn nothing. At Inverness, Thursday, June 7th, I rode over to Sir Archibald Grant's, 12 computed miles from Aberdeen. It is surprising to see how the country between is improved, even within these 3 years. On every side, the wild, dreary moors are plowed up and covered with rising corn. All the ground near Sir Archibald's, in particular, is as well cultivated as most in England. About 7 I preached. The kirk was pretty well filled, though upon short notice. Certainly this is a nation swift to hear and slow to speak, though not slow to wrath. Sunday the 10th. About 8 we reached Inverness. I could not preach abroad because of the rain, nor could I hear of any convenient room, so that I was afraid my coming hither would be in vain. All ways seemed to be blocked up. At 10 I went to the kirk. After service, Mr. Fraser, one of the ministers, invited us to dinner and then to drink tea. As we were drinking tea, he asked at what hour I would please to preach. I said, at 5:30. The high kirk was filled in a very short time, and I have seldom found greater liberty of spirit. The other minister came afterward to our inn and showed the most cordial affection. Were it only for this day, I should not have regretted the riding 100 miles. Monday the 11th. A gentleman who lives 3 miles from the town invited me to his house, assuring me the minister of his parish would be glad if I would make use of his kirk, but time would not permit, as I had appointed to be at Aberdeen on Wednesday. All I could do was to preach once more at Inverness. I think the church was fuller now than before, and I could not but observe the remarkable behavior of the whole congregation after service. Neither man, woman, nor child spoke one word all the way down the main street. Indeed, the seriousness of the people is the less surprising when it is considered that, for at least 100 years, this town has had such a succession of pious ministers as very few in Great Britain have known. After Edinburgh, Glasgow, and Aberdeen, I think Inverness is the largest town I have seen in Scotland. The main streets are broad and straight, the houses mostly old, but not very bad nor very good. It stands in a pleasant and fruitful country and has all things needful for life and godliness. The people in general speak remarkably good English and are of a friendly, courteous behavior. His sermon and congregation to order. About 11 we took horse. While we were dining at Nairn, the innkeeper said, "Sir, the gentlemen of the town have read the little book you gave me on Saturday, and I would be glad if you would please to give them a sermon." Upon my consenting, the bell was immediately rung, and the congregation was quickly in the kirk. Oh, what a difference is there between South and North Britain. Everyone here at least loves to hear the word of God, and none takes it into his head to speak one uncivil word to any for endeavoring to save their souls. Doubting whether Mr. Grant had come, Mr. Kershaw called at the Grange Green near Forest while I rode forward. Mr. Grant soon called me back. I have seldom seen a more agreeable place. The house is an old castle which stands on a little hill with a delightful prospect all four ways, and the hospitable master has left nothing undone to make it still more agreeable. He showed us all his improvements, which are very considerable in every branch of husbandry. In his gardens many things were more forward than at Aberdeen, yea, or Newcastle. And how is it that none but one Highland gentleman has discovered that we have a tree in Britain, as easily raised as an ash, the wood of which is fully as fine a red as mahogany, namely, the laburnum? I defy any mahogany to exceed the chairs which he has lately made of this. Tuesday the 12th. We rode through the pleasant and fertile county of Murray to Elgin. I never suspected before that there was any such country as this near 150 miles beyond Edinburgh, a country which is supposed to have generally 6 weeks more sunshine in a year than any part of Great Britain. At Elgin are the ruins of a noble cathedral, and the largest that I remember to have seen in the kingdom. We rode thence to the Spee, the most rapid river next to the Rhine that I ever saw. Though the water was not breast high to our horses, they could very hardly keep their feet. We dined at Keith and rode on to Strathbogie, much improved by the linen manufacture. All the country from Fauchebers to Strathbogie has little houses scattered up and down, and not only the valleys but the mountains themselves are improved with the utmost care. They want only more trees to make them more pleasant than most of the mountains in England. The whole family at our inn, 11 or 12 in number, gladly joined with us in prayer at night. Indeed, so they did at every inn where we lodged, for among all the sins they have imported from England, the Scots have not yet learned, at least not the common people, to scoff at sacred things. Wednesday the 13th, we reached Aberdeen about 1. Between 6 and 7, both this evening and the next, I preached in the shell of the new house and found it a time of much consolation. Friday the 15th, we set out early and came to Dundee just as the boat was going off. We designed to lodge at the house on the other side, but could not get either eat, drink, or good words, so we were constrained to ride on to Cupar. After traveling nearly 90 miles, I found no weariness at all, neither were our horses hurt. Thou, O Lord, dost save both man and beast. Wesley and a Scotch Communion. Saturday the 16th, we had a ready passage at Kinghorn, and in the evening I preached on the Calton Hill to a very large congregation, but a still larger assembled at 7 on Sunday morning in the high school yard. Being afterward informed that the Lord's Supper was to be administered in the West Kirk, I knew not what to do, but at length I judged it best to embrace the opportunity, though I did not admire the manner of administration. After the usual morning service, the minister enumerated several sorts of sinners whom he forbade to approach. Two long tables were set on the sides of one aisle covered with tablecloths. On each side of them a bench was placed for the people. Each table held 4 or 5 and 30. Three ministers sat at the top behind a cross table. One of them made a long exhortation, closed with the words of our Lord, and then breaking the bread gave it to him who sat on each side of him. A piece of bread was then given to him who sat first on each of the four benches. He broke off a little piece and gave the bread to the next. So it went on, the deacons giving more when wanted. A cup was then given to the first person on each bench, and so by one to another. The minister continued his exhortation all the time they were receiving. Then four verses of the 22nd Psalm were sung, while new persons sat down at the tables. A second minister then prayed, consecrated, and exhorted. I was informed the service usually lasted till 5 in the evening. How much more simple as well as more solemn is the service of the Church of England. Swansea. An honest man at Kidwelly told us there was no difficulty in riding the sands, so we rode on. In 10 minutes, one overtook us who used to guide persons over them, and it was well he did, for, in all probability, we had been swallowed up. The whole sands are at least 10 miles over, with many streams of quicksands intermixed, but our guide was thoroughly acquainted with them and with the road on the other side. By his help, between 5 and 6, we came well tired to Oxwich in Cower. I had sent 2 persons on Sunday that they might be there early on Monday, and so sent notice of my coming all over the country. But they came to Oxwich scarcely a quarter of an hour before me, so the poor people had no notice at all, nor was there any to take us in. The person with whom the preacher used to lodge was 3 miles out of town. After I had stayed a while in the street, for there were no public house, a poor woman gave me house room. Having had nothing since breakfast, I was very willing to eat or drink, but she simply told me she had nothing in the house but a dram of gin. However, I afterward procured a dish of tea at another house and was much refreshed. About 7 I preached to a little company, and again in the morning. They were all attention, so that even for the sake of this handful of people, I did not regret my labor. Sunday, November 4th, I proposed to the leaders the assisting the Society for the Reformation of Manners with regard to their heavy debt. One of them asked, "Ought we not to pay our own debt first?" After some consultations, it was agreed to attempt it. The general debt of the Society in London, occasioned chiefly by repairing the foundry and chapels and by building at Wapping and Snowfields, was about £900. This I laid before the Society in the evening and desired them all to set their shoulders to the work, either by a present contribution or by subscribing what they could pay on the 1st of January, February, or March. Monday the 5th, London. My scraps of time this week I employed in setting down my present thoughts upon a single life, which indeed are just the same they have been these 30 years, and the same they must be unless I give up my Bible. Wesley's experiments with lions. Monday, December 31st. I thought it would be worthwhile to make an odd experiment. Remembering how surprisingly fond of music the lion at Edinburgh was, I determined to try whether this was the case with all animals of the same kind. I accordingly went to the tower with one who plays on the German flute. He began playing near 4 or 5 lions. Only one of these, the rest not seeming to regard it at all, rose up, came to the front of his den, and seemed to be all attention. Meantime, a tiger in the same den started up, leaped over the lion's back, turned and ran under his belly, leaped over him again, and so to and fro incessantly. Can we account for this by any principle of mechanism? Can we account for it at all? Chapter 14. Justice for Methodists, Methodist Character, Instructions to Parents, Wesley's Opinion of Mary Queen of Scots. 1765, Tuesday, January 1st. This week I wrote an answer to a warm letter published in the London Magazine, the author whereof is much displeased that I presume to doubt of the modern astronomy. I cannot help it. Nay, the more I consider, the more my doubts increase, so that at present I doubt whether any man on earth knows either the distance or magnitude, I will not say of a fixed star, but of Saturn or Jupiter, yea, of the sun or moon. Sunday the 20th. I employed all my leisure hours this week in revising my letters and papers. Abundance of them I committed to the flames. Perhaps some of the rest may see the light when I am gone. Breakfast with Mr. Whitfield. Monday, October 21st, I went in the coach from Bristol to Salisbury, and on Thursday the 24th came to London. Monday the 28th. I breakfasted with Mr. Whitfield, who seemed to be an old man, being fairly worn out in his master's service, though he has hardly seen 50 years. And yet it pleases God that I, who am now in my 63rd year,